Welcome to another edition of the Falcon and Winter Soldier recap, or I guess the questions from the episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier. We really never got over a name, but this is the IB Sports Podcast Network, the same guys that bring you the Backdoor Cover, the Team Turnbuckle Podcast, the RC Report. There's an NBA show. I mean, the list goes to Mod Pod. So please be sure to subscribe to the IB Sports Podcast Network. You can find that on iTunes, Spotify, or Anchor. And again, today we're going to be discussing Falcon and Winter Soldier, episode 4, a very good episode. I am your host, Keith Fleming. With me, I can really say as always because he's been on both of the episodes so far, and my co-host from the Weekly Daily Fantasy Football Podcast, the man with the stats. Oh, wait a minute, it's the wrong podcast. Joe Matz, what's going on, Joe?
Yeah, I'm just stressing about what Arizona basketball is going to do with their head coaching position. So, you know, just fun times for me.
At least the women are good, though.
Yeah, that's true.
But me and Joe did bring in backup today. And, I mean, you want to talk about bringing in the big guns. Another guy that I do podcasts with, my co-host from the Team Turnbuckle Wrestling Podcast, who, boy, did we had a busy weekend, didn't we, Sam? Sam the Shooter Howell. Sam, what's going on?
On your left, not much. Just finished off a fucking long day of work. Really enjoyed this episode, and just sent you guys I think you'll enjoy it. It will come up when we discuss later in the show. I promise it's related.
Oh my god!
Wow. So just because we're full discretion here, you know, behind the curtain, we were talking about the power broker. Sam, I guess it's from the comics. The photo you just sent.
Yes.
We're going to have to put this up in the both IB Entertainment Group and the IB Sports page because I can't even do it justice with describing it. So let's get right into this last episode.
Just before we do, I just want to say that actually having me on here to discuss the Power Broker works because there was a pro wrestling aspect to the Power Broker. He was a pro wrestling promoter in the comics, which I don't think they're bringing in.
It's not Bobby the Brain, right? For those that have not listened to the podcast, welcome. But we do not do recaps of the episode. I seriously doubt somebody would be listening to a Falcon and Winter Soldier podcast who did not listen to the or watch the episode. So we're not going to do that. What we do really is talk about the big questions from the episode and just kind of talk it out. This was, I think it was the best episode. I think it was even better than episode 2. It was dark. We'll get into that near the end of the episode, which is kind of a left turn for Marvel. But to me, the big theme, and it's kind of what the first several questions are about, is really differentiating and separating Sam and John, the new Captain America. I mean, they went out of their way with showing the difference in these two guys. And it kind of started with, let's go over how they handled the Flag Smashers. You know, they were trying to find them. They did. And, you know, Sam really wanted to have a talk with them. You saw kind of the intangibles that Sam has that, you know, show that he is probably the right person to take on the mantle of Captain America. He's compassionate. His ability to connect, ability to reason with people, compromise, which is what he was actually working with them when he was talking to them. You know, we need to find common ground here because when you talk in absolutes, you're no different than, you know, the enemies that you're fighting, which I thought was just a beautiful point. And then, of course, dickhead, our boy New Cap, who just, I mean, there was some ambiguity in the first couple of episodes. There's been none in the last two. It just keeps going the other way for him. He said he'd give him 10 minutes. He didn't give him the full 10, right? I know they didn't completely clarify that.
He did not.
So he comes busting in, of course, you know, because he's not happy with it. And this is just the opposite of how Steve, you know, would have handled this. And you just need to remember that Steve, yes, he had the, you know, super serum, but Steve was the leader of gods from, you know, other dimensions. Aliens. He got Iron Man, who's probably the most arrogant dude in the galaxy to follow him, and really brought all these people together. And you saw some signs of that with Sam, and the complete opposite, you know, with our boy, I just call him New Cap, trying to get results. I mean, Joe, that was the first of several different ways, but I mean, you think that was kind of the purpose of what they're doing here, is they're trying to draw a direct line of the guy that has, you know, the shield and the guy who turned it down and was supposed to be the heir apparent.
Yeah, I think there's one of the reasons I think we're seeing why in this episode, finally, we're seeing why Sam should be the new Cap. And part of it is actually that he turned it down. I think it's that he doesn't feel any entitlement towards this, where Walker, as soon as he's Cap, I mean, like we saw last episode, it's like, do you know who I am? He has this entitlement to it. And I think that also ties into, you know, why Steve's been the guy who had the super serum and turned out fine. And it's because he started out as a weak guy who still wanted to go out and fight. He didn't, like, there's a humbleness to Steve that's inherent in Sam too, that is obviously not there with Walker, where, and I think that goes to why Sam also was like, I wouldn't want the super soldier serum, because he doesn't feel the need to have that power, where Walker, as soon as the Dor Milaje kick his ass, he's like, they're not even super soldiers, so like, fuck this, I need this.
So that's actually second like parallel I want to get into real quick.
Yeah.
So Sam, the, you know, the serum was a great example, because I mean, what's the old, you know, the oldest tale and you know, these stories, right? That, you know, it's the leader is usually what, you know, what made Jon Snow the guy in Game of Thrones, right? He didn't want to be the leader. Like we see that over and over again in fantasy. And when they asked Sam, you know, would you take the serum? He didn't even hesitate. He didn't take a breath. He immediately said no. And it reminded me a lot of Steve jumping on that grenade. You know, it was an instinct decision. Like it was something that he didn't even have to think about, because it's just inherent in his personality and what he's made up of, that, no, I you know, I don't want to be that. And then just the contrast of, you know, obviously he talked, John did talk to Battlestar about it, right? And he did seem somewhat conflicted, at least in that conversation. Mm-hmm. So he hesitated. And he does throw it back to Battlestar. They go back and forth, and they both kind of ultimately agree that they would. But I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say he knew the answer all along, because, you know, he found the final vial of serum from Carly. He hid it. He didn't tell anyone. And again, not to get all like Star Wars, but this is like he was tempted by the dark side. And in a lot of ways, it reaffirmed what Zemo's been saying, right, Sam, that if you give people this power, eventually they're going to make wrong decisions.
I think that it goes back to, you were talking about fantasy, but I think it goes back to real life. The people who deserve power are the people who want it the least. I promise, because we give the flag smashes, that's why I'm saving my political stuff, aka the real heroes of the story, is that, like, who do we find the most off-putting in politics? It's people like Hillary Clinton and Ted Cruz, who are these very nakedly ambitious people. So for John Walker, you know, in that scene, what I saw it as was that he was going to say, no matter what, he was going to say, either, yes, I absolutely would take it. You know, no matter if Lamar had said, no, I'm not going to take it, then Sam would have been, you know, John Walker would have been like, well, you know, but think of all the good you could do with it. Whereas if he had said, you know, by saying yes, it was a tacit way of Sam, of John being able to, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think that I go back to a line from The Boys, which is when Giancarlo Esposito is talking about he talks about I'm gonna biff the line, and I'm actually looking for it because I really don't want to, where he talks about how impotent rage is a luxury of entitled white men. And I think it sort of plays into that, where like Sam, you know, has to be perfect because he's, you know, he's under a different microscope.
Jay, do you want anything? Because there's another difference I want to get into, if not.
Well, on the impotent white men rage thing, I mean, I think that they're very much playing into that. Because again, when does that turning point finally happen for him? When a bunch of black women kick his ass. Like,
that.
I don't know if you necessarily want to read into that with the character, but I think the show, I think that's a purposeful choice.
So that's what I was actually getting into, is the difference in the way Sam and John, you know, take losing, particularly in hand-to-hand combat. You know, we've joked, Joe, several times on this podcast, and unfortunately Sam gets his ass kicked a lot in his run in Marvel. I mean, you know, Ant-Man, but he never takes it personally. And, you know, for that matter, he seems to be trying to avoid physical battle. I mean, look how he wanted to work with Carly and the Flag Smashers. I think his words were, you know, we have more that we agree on than disagree. And then it was a very tough episode for John Walker. So, you know, I don't want to throw it just this way, but, you know, he ended up going heel or turning bad. But I mean, the moment he couldn't take, as you said, or cemented it, is when Io and the Dora Milaje just, they worked him, Battlestar, Sam and Bucky. And he was so dejected. And he's sitting there on the floor, almost like a child, and, you know, said they weren't even super soldiers. So how does he respond? He immediately looks to take a shortcut. And as soon as he's able to do that, how does he want to respond again with strength and force? And so, again, we see two huge differences here. You have Sam, who is, you know, yes, he's lost a lot of battles, but he's looking for, you know, compromise, resolve, you know, trying to not make the situation worse. And then you got John, who, you know, he gets his ass kicked and basically he takes a bunch of steroids. And now he's like, okay, now I'm going to really show you how it's done.
I feel like there's like an academic paper that I'm going to do about like the power of whiteness.
I will read it.
Because like so much of this is the idea that like, so Sam is here to, you know, he responds and he's looking for compromise, and you have John Walker, who is this very entitled, you know, sort of guy who, you know, whatever, like they sort of played it up, but like, we still don't know a whole lot about his background. Mm. But, you know, as soon as things don't go his way, he like basically cheats and then comes back to brutalize people who just outworked him. I feel like this is all like, it's funny. It's like, I didn't think of the metaphor of this until I was like, oh, not a subtle show.
And that's what's interesting. I mean, is that they're really, whether it be out in the open or just sort of in the background, they're talking about some very important issues in America. And again, it all gets back to what me and Joe talked about in the first few episodes, is that there is a lot of reasons for why Sam would not want to take that shield with everything it represents and the, what, you know, the reaction it would get and everything. And then forget the fact that it's just the pressure of this person that he looked up to, you know, and was one of his best friends, or if not his best friend, you know, trying to live on and sort of carry on his legacy. So we're going to get back to a little bit of that in a minute, but then there's our boy Zemo, who he is still making big moves. His dance is still going viral, which is just hilarious. They released the Snyder or the Zemo cut of his dance, which is just, what an amazing flex by Disney Plus. But he definitely still has his own plans, and we're not fully aware what he's up to. He got the information about where to find Carly from the kids. I thought that was really smart, you know, just showing the difference, honestly, in the three of them and his training and stuff, that, you know, both Bucky and Sam kind of just, you know, Sam actually did a pretty good job of it. It's just people had, you know, especially being adults, they've had enough bad experience. They're like, I don't trust you. I don't care what you say or who you are, to where the kids obviously are more likely to probably give information away. Of course, Bucky was terrible at it. And then he holds that information from Bucky and Sam as long as he can. He obviously escapes near the end of the episode. And maybe I'm overlooking this, but why did Zemo miss a kill shot on Carly from point blank range? I mean, you got to remember, he was part of a special ops team in his homeland. So he knows how to obviously shoot a gun. We've seen that in the first couple of episodes. He had no problem killing the scientist, which I believe was basically the same range. Something doesn't add up here. What do we think Zemo is up to?
So I would love to just fully take credit for this thought myself, but actually on the Ringerverse, Van Lathan and Charles Holmes had this discussion, and Charles brought up that when he shoots her, he doesn't yet know where the vials are of the super serum.
That's a very good point. So
at that point, he needs her to find out where they are. And then obviously once he does, that's when he goes on. His primary mission is to destroy those vials first before anything else. So I think that's the explanation there.
Where do you think he's going, Sam?
I actually, you know, so the obvious, we'll get to the power broker. But the obvious is that he's the power broker. Is that like there's like that's the big twist, which is I personally think that the power broker is how they're going to introduce mutants or the Fantastic Four to the no, I'm joking.
Oh, okay. Wow. Sam, you know how easily I get sucked into these things. I've said Becky Lynch was going to return now for 2 months in WWE, so be careful.
It is, you know, no, it's more that that's like the one like sort of mystery in this story. And like after the obvious, I feel like too much is being, it's being too laid out that Sharon is the power broker. I just feel, I mean, I'm fine with it just because it makes sense. But the if they want to pull a twist, then it would make sense that it's Zemo, and that Zemo, you know,
would be really out of character for it too, right? Like, if we really get down to it, this would be more something Zemo would be, you know, willing to do than Sharon Carter. I know she's a little bitter and stuff, but I mean, it sounds like the power broker is a pretty terrible dude.
Yeah, and I mean the
or dudette, yeah. Sorry.
I think that. And there's so much, like, I feel like I don't know how much time they're going to have in the last two episodes, but there's a lot of ground left to cover. You know, we still need to go back and see more about Isaiah Bradley. We need to find out.
Definitely.
We need to find out who the power broker is. We need to see what's going on with Sam. There's still the old dude who Bucky killed his son. Like, there's a lot of stuff that, like, you kind of got to, you know, resolve in two episodes.
So let's do the Battlestar and then we'll get into the Bucky. Sam, you know, it's so funny you brought up the boys because I was going to give the rest, you know, the reference that, you know, you being a guest on our podcast, and we both love the boys, that when Battlestar died, you know, that was kind of the official heel turn for John Walker. And it's because Battlestar was the parrot, you know, on his shoulder. You know, just like in the boys, how, you know, they explained that, you know, you got to have that good voice on your show, because he really was. I mean, Battlestar was, you know, for the most part, always trying to get him to do the, you know, the right thing, or at least listen to reason. And we learn more about, you know, Battlestar and New Cap earning their medals of honor. Like, is that going to happen? Because in this episode, I thought it was really interesting that they brought up that it was the day they earned those medals being the worst day of their life, which, I mean, there's no other way to put it. That is shocking to hear that. I mean, I know obviously you don't earn a medal for, you know, being on a picnic or anything, but at the same time, the worst day of your life. So this is, you know, again, this conversation happens right before the battle. Battlestar dies after that. And then that's when John or New Cap officially turns heel. I think, again, just kind of highlighting that it's more important. Are we going to find out more information about that? And maybe if this has something to do with, you know, why John is the way he is.
My sense is no. I mean, I don't necessarily think we need more to know other than the problem. So it depends on what they're doing with it, because obviously if you want to make him more sympathetic, yeah, you go into like all, you know, the terrible things that happened to him on that day. Otherwise, you know, like, it could always be that he did some dark shit and that he got, you know, that was rewarded for it, and it was covered up, and he got that, you know, that was a reward for him. So depends on where they want to go with it. You know, I hope that they won't, you know, go too into that. I feel like there's too, you know, that we know enough about it.
Joe, they, you know, we talked about in the first, second episode, they did such a good job with John's introduction, you know, really kind of making him seem like a good guy. Yeah. Why did they do that with everything that has happened since then? Is this sort of, again, getting along to the Zemo's point about that, you know, the problem with idols or, you know, prophets or whatever you want to, you know, call them, is that eventually they fail you.
Yeah, I think it does tie into that, in that I think John has put that pressure on himself that now that he's Captain America, he kind of has to live up to that idol. And I think that conversation beforehand, and there's two ways you can read it in this episode. One is it's probably the worst day also because he probably lost guys on that day. And so then during the process of that, I think he did do some, I mean, it was war. He probably did some fucked up shit. And so I think, I think he's probably taking on Captain America is his, he's feeling like this is my chance to really like go follow my true north, complete the mission.
Right. I think in this episode that this is the first chance that I really have a chance to do
something. Exactly. So I think he's got that pressure on him. And then he loses his best friend during that. And then I also think, as far as the sympathy goes, my understanding, Sam can correct me if I'm wrong, is that Walker was kind of this update for like a war on terror type Captain America. And so I kind of feel like he's a stand-in for the United States in the same way that Steve is, you know, the greatest generation. He fought the Nazis. It's a little more complicated now. Like when Lamar dies, my first thought and everything that happened there was like, this feels kind of 9/11-ish. Like something terrible has happened to him. You know, you can argue, obviously I think the Flag Smashers are more sympathetic than Osama bin Laden, but, but you know, ultimately on some level they are terrorists and they killed his best friend. Something terrible has happened. And then he doesn't really care how he gets revenge so long as he gets revenge, which I think, you know, if you followed along with the Bush administration, it's pretty easy to see a through line between that and what John Walker is doing.
Walker was actually earlier, it was Vietnam.
Okay. Oh, it's Vietnam. So
I'm talking about in the TV show. That's a really interesting point because, you know, some for valid reasons, some for other. And again, full disclosure, I don't ever want it to sound like I'm talking bad about the military, but just the way the military is perceived today and in the last couple of decades compared to, you know, after World War I and World War II is miles apart with everyday Americans. And a lot of that obviously is the reason why we're in their war, you know, these wars, and has nothing to do with any decisions the soldiers have made. But that's just, to me, a really interesting point that I had not thought about.
Well, there's also, just to piggyback off of that, one reason why another sort of breadcrumb, I mean, if they really want to do this, I will be impressed, is that the Flag Smashers are anarchists. And, you know, one of the anarchist slogans is no gods, no masters. And the idea of Zemo talking about, like, you can't have idols is like an anarchist concept. So I would be interested in seeing that. I also think, the show is really, and I don't mind it being unsubtle, but it is, I think that there is an aspect of the comparison of, you know, Steve is sort of the greatest generation World War II veteran versus John Walker, who's the guy who's gone over and, you know, and again, I'm not going to be critical of the military, but that sort of idea of the war on terror and what Joe was saying, I thought was really insightful about, we're going, you know, getting revenge at all costs.
So then let's get into really, to me, the most exciting, scene of the entire episode when all hell breaks loose in Sam, Bucky, and Zemo's room. I'm going to get into just an unbelievable debate that I can't believe I've been seeing some of the takes I have. But first, how shocking was it when we realized that the Wakandans had put in basically a safety system where they could detach Bucky's arm. I mean, and what a great acting job by Sebastian Stan too, because I mean, he was legitimately shocked. And I love it. It was Sam, right? Or was it Zemo that asked him, were you aware that they could do that? And he just says no. And I mean, like, both of them are just like, holy shit, what just happened?
But why
just to go ahead.
I was going to say that, like, why wouldn't they? Like, the
No, we're going to get into that, but I couldn't believe that, you know, it was shocking. I mean, you're right, though. With they've been screwed many times before. And what was the whole point of the first Black Panther movie, right?
Yeah, and sort of what I also took from that was that I've heard people like, well, they don't trust him. It's like, I don't know if they necessarily trust him. Like,
we're going to get into the awful takes here in a minute. Go ahead, I just mean, but we're going to get into deeper into that.
Okay, I'll save that for them.
Go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just going to agree. It's another example of Wakanda being a step ahead, that they're just like, yeah, we've helped this guy out. We think he's a good guy, but why shouldn't we have a failsafe if we ever need to fight him? Like, it's just thinking one step ahead.
And remember that they literally have the smartest person in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has been said by Kevin Feige, that Shuri is the smartest person in the galaxy. So we should not be surprised that they think of every possible outcome there is. And again, well, actually, let's just go ahead and get into this, because I could not believe that. And it wasn't just on one place. It wasn't just one Twitter page. I saw it in three different Facebook groups, like posts with a bunch of people agreeing. So a lot of people were feeling sympathetic for Bucky about this. And I can't. Okay, I got to calm myself down. I'm getting frustrated. So, that you know, he knows this means they don't trust him. That's what people were saying. You know, how dare they not trust him? He's been through so much trauma. And it's like, yes, he has, but he's also killed a bunch of people. And they were the ones who spent the time to fix him. They were the one who gave him that arm. And, you know, you do need to remember, obviously, the line that he said to Sam, where if Steve was wrong about Sam, that means he could be wrong about me. And it shows that he was doubting himself and his own rehabilitation. And again, I get all of that. But again, just to remind everyone, and especially because I wrote this post or comment 1,000 times on Twitter and Facebook in the last couple of days, Bucky was betraying Wakanda. Like, he already was. They showed up. He had broke out of jail, literally their probably worst enemy in the world, the guy that killed their king. He didn't tell them about it. He was told that he had 8 hours, and he could basically convince them to give him a little bit more time. They did. That time had surpassed. They came back to get him, and it just feels so much like this is what the show is about, how depending on your race or your upbringing, you can, you know, like, view something completely different or ignore evidence based on tribalism. Because again, if you're feeling bad for Bucky, let me just again say, and this again was media members, that to put it in terms, everyone should understand, a white man is helped by a Black community, given an arm, rehabilitated. He then betrays them technically twice. And people are upset or feel bad for Bucky because the people of Wakanda put in a fail safe on the notion Bucky was untrustworthy and would only be used if he betrayed them, which he did. And they enacted that plan. Like, are we freaking serious?
And that's sort of where I take it from, is that people are like, oh, they didn't trust that he was not going to, you know, what I looked at it as is that, you know, the shifting nature, and this is something that goes into the larger political context of the shifting nature of geopolitical. Shit, can't believe I just said that.
Talking about there we go.
Yes, the shifting nature of geopolitical alliances, as exhibited in The Falcon and Winter Soldier. Sorry, I'm very clearly just working on my thesis right now.
It's gonna be great. We can't wait to read it.
But seriously, is that, you know, that, yeah, like, so the Winter Soldier today might be on their side, but what happens if tomorrow they're lined up in the same sort of civil war that we saw in the, like, 6 years ago in Showtime, that all they were doing was, you know, protecting themselves? So no, I have no problem with it. And like, if Bucky didn't want them to put a failsafe, build your own fucking vibranium arm.
The other thing that's bizarre about this theory is, A, I co-sign everything Sam said. It makes sense. And then B, they didn't even do anything that bad to him. Like,
they let him keep his arm, right? Like, it's not like they took it.
Yeah, they didn't rewire his brain and make him have a setback. They just took one arm off briefly, like in the battle. Like, he's fine. I don't understand why anyone would be upset about this. And like you said, Keith, like, they gave him time to turn him over. It's not like they came in, being John Walker it, and barge in and just make demands. Be like, here's your time. All right, you didn't do it. Here's the consequence. You lose your arm for 60 seconds. Like, that, the Bill Nage are the big winners of this episode. They're
Bucky
the best.
Has made some really, you know, again, we talked about this last episode, Joe, that Bucky has just, like, not came across great in this show so far with a lot of his decisions. I mean, he hasn't been telling mm-hmm. Sam, you know, what's going on. He's been lying to people. And, you know, even in this scene, he was really getting a kick out of Nap getting his ass kicked.
He was.
And then he's like, oh, wait a minute, I got to intervene here. And then, you know, bad things happen. I will say, for character growth for him, and the flashback was beautiful where you see, I mean, really the joy in both of them when they realize that they've kind of broken mm-hmm. Bucky from this, you know, hold that, you know, this, I don't even know what you would call that, right? Like
programming.
Thank yeah. you. You know, where he was free. And that was why it, you could tell out of everything. And it did hurt him, obviously, that he didn't know that, you know, they could basically just pop his arm off at any time. But what hurt the most, you could tell, was when she didn't call him White Wolf. Because basically, you know, their friendship, she's like, look, you know, you were part of our community. We took you in, we rehabilitated, you were really family, and you betrayed us. And, you know, good luck, you know, best in your future endeavors, right? To go with the WWE term, Sam there. The moving on to New Cap, he ends this week by, did he chop off the dude's head, or did he just basically gash his chest in so bad that the final scene is him standing there being videotaped and surrounded by everybody with the shield covered in blood, which, by the way, Sam, I'm assuming that would be like a great comic book final page, mm-hmm. right? Like that's all I could kind of get. I'm not a big comic book guy, but that's what I felt when I was looking at that final scene. Do what?
I'm getting you. I'll get you to his comic book guy.
But I mean, what did you think that he chopped the dude's heads off or did he gash it? And just, wow, like that was really violent and dark for Marvel.
I'm going with, based on Disney, he
yeah, it's not the boys.
Yeah. And that we will never know. All we need to know. And I thought that it was also evocative of the, of course you guys bring me on and it all gets political. It's evocative of the, you know, the cell phone footage we've seen of police brutality. And I think that, you know, yeah, I don't think it's a good look for Captain America to be, you know, caving in the kid's, you know, skull, whatever he did to him. It's not a good look.
It's a really good analogy. I had not even thought about that with, you
no,
know,
me
you
either.
Know, this is somebody who's supposed to protect and serve and, you know, be this American symbol, much like police officers and told, you know, video cameras. A lot of people did not believe that, you know, they could misbehave in this way. It took this to really, you know, get people actually understanding what's going on in this country.
It's even worse than that. The Rodney King beating, there are people who are
that's
like,
fair.
Well,
yeah, no, you're right. Yeah.
But there still are. There still
yeah,
are.
No, I'm not saying, but I'm saying that it's what finally started to move the needle.
For a lot of people.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Joe.
Man, it got real
being
dark.
So dark, like, it's shocking. I mean, that would be that felt like almost a DC episode or movie when the credits rolled. What do you think the reasoning is of, you know, why they did that? What were they trying to kind of prove by taking that step, especially in a TV show? This is not a movie that, you know, rated PG-13, you decide to, you know, let your child in. This is something that's on Disney Plus that basically any person with, you know, a Disney Plus app and, you know, subscription can watch.
I mean, from a storytelling standpoint, I think it's just a clear sign of how unhinged Walker is, especially the fact that it's in public. You know, it'd be one, like, I don't think any of us would be that shocked if Walker did this in a dark alleyway where no one was around. especially under those circumstances. But the fact that he's just doing it in the wide open and Sam and Bucky come out and they're, the looks on their faces are like, what the fuck is happening? Like, even they, who are not fans of Walker, are shocked by this. And I am very interested to see how it plays out going forward with, you know, how does the government handle this? Are they going to try to rein Walker in? I mean,
remember, Steve was having to be on the run just because he wouldn't sign the Sokovian Accord. You know what I mean? Like,
as opposed to murdering someone in the middle of a town square.
I think that, yeah, I mean, that's sort of where it gets interesting. Actually, though, Keith, I would say the difference is if it had been DC, it would have been Steve doing it, and it would not have been seen as a bad thing.
That's right. Like Superman just shooting flames through, you know, hordes of people. Yeah.
Like we would have got a speech from Sharon or from Peggy, where she's like, "You don't owe these people shit, Steve. Fuck them. Quit."
Is there any chance too that there was some, you know, again talking about contrast and the difference? Here you have the new capped, you know, beating somebody senseless and you know, in cold blood who was defenseless. And one of the last scenes that we have of the original Captain America is with a broken shield, body beaten to, you know, a crisp, ready to take on Thanos and his entire army to try to, you know, save the world, basically. And again, it just kind of the difference in you know, what Captain America, you know, should be or was, and, you know, the difference in what this guy is.
When you brought up earlier, it hadn't occurred to me, and I don't think I've heard anyone make this point before, about how, you know, Sam getting his ass kicked constantly throughout the MCU has kind of been viewed as like, you've really got to work hard to show him kick ass now to justify him being Cap. But when you brought it up earlier, it occurred to me that we forget sometimes, because it's only a brief part of the MCU, but Steve was a guy who had 20 years of getting his ass kicked.
I can do this all day, right? I can do this all day.
It's a defining part of his actual personality, and it's one of the reasons why his first answer isn't always to just go in and kick ass. It's part of why he's a more empathetic person. And so I think that actually the fact that Sam's gotten his butt kicked so many times now plays into why he should be the heir, why he should have that power, because he understands what it's like to be on the other side to a degree, whereas Walker clearly doesn't have that at all.
There was one of the things that when I did judo and jiu-jitsu that the instructor said is that there are two people, when somebody tells you that they've never lost a fight, they're telling you they're telling you one of two things. They're a liar, or they've not won any fights, because everyone loses fights. And that you learn more from losing fights than you do from winning them. I think that I also thought that, again, tying into the whole military thing, that, you know, that Walker was not, his goal was not to bring the Flag Smasher to justice. It was to kill
revenge. Him. Yeah.
And I think that that's the other difference, is that Steve Rogers would not go and get, you know, that I don't think he, you know, like with Bucky, he didn't want, you know, Bucky to be killed. He wanted Bucky to be deprogrammed. And I think that's seeing the good in people and sort of the altruism of Steve Rogers as his superpower.
I completely agree. Like that actually is a good point, that Steve's superpower, you know, I've heard several people say he didn't really have it. You know, he was souped up. His superpower was all the things we were talking about with Sam and these traits that he has of, you know, being a leader, being compassionate, you know, being somebody that tries to reach across the aisle, you know, and that's the reason the Avengers worked, honestly. And that's why it's going to be so interesting moving forward without Tony and Steve. I mean, they really were the glue in different ways that kind of, you know, made that group go, along with Nick Fury. So one more question for both of y'all. We've got two episodes left, and I think it's safe to say at this point, the main point of the show is, will Sam decide he wants to carry the shield, take on Cap's mantle? But what is the other parts or themes of this show? Because, man, it could go in a million directions. I mean, how are we ultimately going to view the Flag Smashers? Will Zemo or John Walker be viewed as, you know, bigger villains when it's done? Like, honestly, I have no idea what they're going to do with two episodes left.
I'm in the same boat. I, like I said, there's a lot to get done. I worry. I think one benefit that they have over WandaVision is that I'm sort of expecting
second season.
No, I'm expecting the big fireworks, Marvel-y, you know, high octane action fight piece for the end.
Sort of like the last hour of Winter Soldier, right?
Yeah, which not a huge fan of, honestly. I feel like that's where the movie breaks down.
Well, we'll have a hot. We'll talk about it another time.
Yeah, we'll talk about this off air. the third act of Civil War is just so much better than the third act of Winter Soldier. But not gonna. I agree with that. But with the show, I mean, obviously there is going to be a big confrontation that I think ends with Sam taking the shield from John Walker. That's likely with his family in danger, is that he's going to, and I don't know, I would assume one thing that I wonder is if he decide that Bucky somehow ends up saving him, and that's what makes Sam decide to take the serum, is that, you know, I don't want to do it, but it's, you know, all things considered, I kind of have to.
Interesting. I hadn't even really considered that much about Sam taking the serum, but I could definitely see it playing out that way. As far as the show, I thought early on, those first two episodes, it was very clearly focused on legacy. And, you know, what's Cap's legacy? How does Sam and Bucky fit in that? What's Bucky's legacy right now? I mean, obviously he feels like his legacy is he's been a murderer for half a century, and he's got to make up for that. And then even Walker is trying to live up to Cap's legacy in his own way, very flawed way. And now it's kind of taken, I think that's still a huge part of it. But I think this episode made clear that supremacy in its various forms is very much what's on the topic here, where, you know, Zemo says that everyone who takes the serum, you know, that kind of, when you get that power, you then feel like other people are beneath you. And then obviously Steve has been the exception to that. But I feel like, you know, again, the Flag Smashers are pretty sympathetic in a lot of ways. But it's clear that that's kind of seeped in when, you know, Sam has that conversation with her where, you know, she kind of finds herself saying, justifying, you know, whatever it takes.
And even she took my words out of context, right? It's like, did I?
Yeah. And I mean, and it's pretty clear that he didn't really, because A, she's already like started murdering at least relatively innocent people. And then here she says, like, killing Sam wouldn't mean anything because he's not the symbol, which is why she then wants to kill Captain America. And when you're valuing people's lives symbolically, as opposed to the fact that every human life has actual value, you're going down a dark path. So she's done that.
She threatened Sam's family, for God's sake.
Yeah, which even, you know, she plays it off as like, oh, it's just, you know, what I needed to do. But again, it's a very slippery slope that she's clearly fallen down now. And, you know, Walker's obviously also jumped in the deep end of, you know, not seeing the value to, I mean, I think it's been pretty clear actually that Walker, to him, the mission is what's most important. And he kind of sets aside whatever his conscience might say, which is again, why Sam is the proper heir to Steve in that regard, is that it's conscience number one. He can see, you know, the Flag Smashers, at this point, they've already killed people, and he's still like, I want to go reason with her because I think I can, and I think that's the way that we avoid more death. So for him,
and we saw other people and the Flag Smashers didn't agree with Carly's mode, you know what I'm saying, like decisions and what she did there. So he's right to, you know, try to reach out to do that. And the supremacy thing is, again, very interesting because, I mean, you could argue that's wrong. What's wrong with the world just in general? Is anytime a group, whether it be by race, you know, your pay grade, like whatever, thinks that they're better than somebody else, bad things happen. And, you know, especially in the United States, where literally the whole point of this country is, you know, we're all equal. But
supposed to be anyway.
Right, exactly. No, exactly.
Just throwing in and not to bag on Steve, but he also didn't have the, you know, he had basically a decade in story time. And I think that we're going to say he came back in 2011 was when he woke up. And the movies ended in 20, you know, he retired in 2023. So he had a little over a decade. But even then, the choice that he made of, you know, that Bucky, you know, think about the Civil War where he chose with Bucky to not tell Stark that Bucky had murdered his parents because he thought that he knew how, well, I mean, he did know. I mean, ultimately, he did know how Stark was going to react. But he thought that, you know, that ultimately, that Tony deserved to know. And Cap, you know, that I think that he would have been able to mitigate that if he had told him. Now, also, we would have had no story. But it
they'd have been fighting over their mothers being named Martha or something, right?
Yeah. DC's really taking a pounding, right? Or Scott Snyder. Zack Snyder. Sorry, Scott Snyder is a very good comic writer. But that I think that, you know, by making that decision, even like we've seen Steve make decisions that were not necessarily, I mean, even choosing, I know that you can argue that he didn't, you know, that he'd earned the chance to retire, but like at the same time, like couldn't they use him right now? You know, like that I, especially now that Tony's gone, you know, is that was kind of a selfish decision. I understand why it was made, but there are arguments, you know, play devil's advocate.
Right. Well, it's really a good show. I mean, I keep saying Marvel's going to rule the world. I mean, we're going to be watching Marvel TV shows and movies to the end of time. And if they continue to create stuff of this high quality, I am all for it. I just would have never thought a decade ago, a guy who never really was in comic books, never really into any of this stuff. And I can't get enough. I mean, it's great. And it really is some of the best writing. And for me, the big thing, I know, Sam, you're somebody who loves to write, Joe, you do as well, that just the fluidity and the continuation of stories and how they do such a good job of, you know, not just writing these one-offs, but allowing the story to flow and, you know, things in the past having consequences and obviously affecting our future and just being more like real life. So I'm very excited for the last two episodes. Sam, you want to plug anything before we get out of here?
Just going to plug the Team Turnbuckle group, podcast and the Twitter account. As I'm a guest here. Also, if I'm going to, you know, since we're discussing comics and the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I'd like to plug the Secret Headquarters, which is a comic book shop that I love in Silver Lake. And I would love to plug Stories Comics. I know that we have a large base in Richmond, Virginia. That's how I got into comics. They have a West Broad store, I think RC has gone to, where you can, you know, they have all sorts of back issues. They're really nice. They always took care of me. But mainly I want to plug the Team Turnbuckle stuff. So subscribe, like, rate, the Patreon for Iconoclastically, for IB Sports, $5 a month, it pays for itself. And that's my plugs.
Joseph?
I'll just plug my favorite line from this episode, which is when Zemo's going through his like list of groups that felt they were superior and then went too far. And then Sam goes, they're our friends. And Bucky, God bless him, makes the point that the Avengers, not the Nazis.
It reminded me, right, of Sam in the, it was the second or third episode when he's like, you know, you're way out of line, but he's right, you know. The same deal.
But yeah, make sure Nazis are never your friend. Always just that. Something to live by.
I think RC literally has made that comment in the group. And anytime you're talking about Nazis, you're on the wrong lane, pretty much no matter what. But again, just want to plug the Ivy Sports Podcast Network. Again, I mean, so much content. We'd really appreciate it. Rate, review, subscribe, and share with your friends. But Sam, I really do appreciate you know, coming on here with me and Joe and talking about a show that I know all three of us really enjoy. And Joe, enjoy doing any podcast with you and basically talking about anything. So for Keith Fleming, Joe Matz, and special guest Sam the Shooter Howell, this has been the IB Sports Falcon and Winter Soldier Recap Podcast. We'll see you next week when we discuss episode 5.